Okay, we'll call a meeting of the Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division to order. And let Senator Pariseau know she's not in the wrong room. I'm not the chair of the committee. But anyway, we do want to hear a bill by the chair of the committee on the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council appropriation. And so for Senate File 119, we'll turn it over to you, Senator Anderson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. And I appreciate your stepping in to chair the committee, Senator Kubley. Senate File 119 is the bill that we talked about and heard some testimony on Tuesday. And we heard from some of the sportsmen's groups, the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance and the Deer Hunters Association on Tuesday. And we've heard pretty much unanimous support and a consensus that this bill should move forward. And so I just wanted to express that I haven't heard any opposition to this bill. Basically, what it will do is transfer money temporarily from a DNR fund into the Legislative Coordinating Commission for the purpose of the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council to be able to pay their administrative expenses and hire a staff person. And you'll recall that in the law that we passed last year, we set up a really aggressive deadline, which, of course, we need to do to get a bill passed this session, that the council has to come back with its recommendation for its portion of the habitat portion of the legacy funds by April 1st. And the DNR was designated by law to temporarily staff the commission. And the council, and I think most of the interested stakeholders really want to get an independent staffer there as quickly as possible. Bill Becker for the DNR has been doing a great job supporting the Heritage Council's work, but it makes sense to get somebody on board who can do that as their only full-time job. And so I promised Mike Kilgore I would just introduce this. I want to leave you something to say. But I have Mike Kilgore from the University of Minnesota, who is our interim chair of the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council. And he graciously agreed to come over to the Capitol today to speak in support of this. And we also have Bob Schroeder, I'll just point out, who's another member of the Heritage Council who's here with us today.
All right. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Kilgore.
I'm sorry. Sorry.
Yes, go ahead.
Just forgot to mention, we do have a delete all amendment, and so let me just very briefly mention that, just for explanation purposes, and then we can vote on that shortly. But maybe we should get that in front of the division. Does everyone have the A2 amendment in front of them?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And Mr. Chair, so I would ask if we could adopt the A2 amendment, and then we can speak to it as amended. We had some discussion originally about transferring the money from the Game and Fish Fund. The Oversight Committee on the Game and Fish Fund looked at this. Senator Chaudhry is a member of that. We heard some feedback. There might be some conflict with federal law to use the money from that fund. And so Dan Mueller, our fiscal analyst, has recommended the Natural Resources Fund in the DNR to be a better source of the funding. And again, it's a temporary loan, and it is very clear that $150,000 will be transferred to the LCC. And then it's the very first tax money that comes in from the constitutional amendment funds will be used to pay that loan back starting by next October at the very latest.
All right. Well, why don't we do that, Senator Anderson? Would you like to move the amendment?
So moved.
Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Senator Anderson. I'm sorry, Senator Chaudhry.
That's all right. It didn't matter if it was before the vote or after. In the previous meeting, we had discussed that the repayment back to the out of the Outdoor Heritage Fund should be come out of the administrative percentage of the 1% allocation. Is that reflected in here, or do we need to do that as add that language as well?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, we talked about that and reviewed the language of the statute, and it seems to me, and maybe Mr. Knopf might want to add to this, or Mr. Mueller, as we've been talking about this, it looked to me like the language in the statute referred only to the DNR's administrative support for the council was limited to that 1%. And it doesn't look like in the statute that we actually passed an overall cap on spending on administrative purposes. And we were just talking about this right before we started that we need to do that. We need to establish some kind of an administrative budget, but we haven't gotten to that point yet.
Okay.
And this is such a small amount under that 1% that I didn't think we needed to have language in here to reflect that, given the circumstances. But I understand. Thanks for asking.
Oh, Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I think there will be greater comfort if somewhere it's reflected, whether it's the considerations we're having on how the administration is going to work, general or in this bill. I think there's going to be greater comfort derived if somewhere it reflects that this loan will come out of an administrative expense allocation as opposed to projects. So whether it needs to be in this bill or if you're in some other language, you're going to address some of these administrative issues. We need to make sure that it's reflected either here or in any other future language you're considering, that this $150,000 needs to come out of the council's administrative expenses, whatever that allocation may be.
Maybe Professor Kilgore would want to speak.
Mr. Chair and Senator Chaudhry. My name is Mike Kilgore, the chair of the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council, for the record. Senator Chaudhry, that is our every intent, and whether it would be done here or it could be in the bill that the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council will be bringing before you in April, we will make sure that whatever is covered on administrative expenses until funds start becoming deposited into the Outdoor Heritage Fund, that those will be fully reimbursed to back to whatever accounts they're coming from.
And just, Madam Chair, or excuse me, Mr. Chair and Dr. Kilgore, I'm not referring to, just to clarify, I'm not referring to the council's commitment that it will do that. I'm referring to whatever law we pass this session should reflect that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Any other discussion on the amendment? Mr. Kilgore, did you? Oh, Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair, the other day I was questioning whether we ought to do this, but I've turned a 100 complete circle. Because if you list a piece of cake compared to a puppy dog bill, I can tell you.
Mr. Chair, Senator, you have my word, I will not accept any puppy amendments.
I just had to have some fun in this part. It wasn't funny the other day, though. But I think this makes sense, as long as it's going to get paid back. And it's going to do great work, and I found out today that I believe that Ag's going to have some water out of this bill. So why wouldn't I support it and hurry up and get... You got my full support today, Senator Anderson.
Okay. Senator Chaudhry?
One more question, Mr. Chair, and Senator Anderson, or maybe fiscal staff has more information. At the last meeting, Senator Anderson, you indicated that you had received a letter from the commissioner of DNR stating that he had dipped into the Game and Fish Fund for these purposes. What I'm hearing from you today is that one of the reasons why your delete all amendment has changed the language from the Game and Fish Fund to the Natural Resource Fund is because of some federal requirement issues. Given the fact that your language reflects some of those, reflects some concerns about the integrity of the Game and Fish Fund, what have you heard since Tuesday from the commissioner of the DNR regarding he going to the Game and Fish Fund for administrative expenses for this council?
And let me, Mr. Chair, let me start.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Meyer, respond to that. I have had a couple of conversations, very brief, with Mr. Meyer in the last 24 hours about how I think one of the, you know, the big expense for the DNR has been to cover Bill Becker's salary as he's been staffing the council. And it's my wish to keep that separate from this and that to handle that as part of either our regular budget or the legacy bill, you know, that that funds the overall habitat expenditures, that we can deal with that at that time, because that's an internal transfer within the agency. And I think, as far as I understand it, the big problem that we were running into with the Game and Fish Fund was transferring it out of the DNR.
Right.
And I see some nods from the smart people at the head of the table there. So there may not be an issue within the DNR's allotments, but we can
Mr. Meyer, do you?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. The federal aid requirements under the Dingell-Johnson-Wallet-Perot rules do not allow for a transfer of funds from the state Game and Fish Agency to any other agency. And it actually, in this case, it's from the executive branch to the legislative branch. So the diversionary issues that we had was taking Game and Fish dollars from the State Department of Natural Resources, Department of Natural Resources, and diverting them to the legislative branch of the LCC in this bill. So we've dealt with that by using natural resources funds, and we're comfortable with that, keeping it at the fund level. We'll be able to manage those accounts so we can come up with those dollars, and as long as we're reimbursed in a timely fashion, what this amendment does, is perfectly fine. The other piece that we're talking about, the current operating dollars of salary for the acting director, our administrative support for the council taking minutes, mailing, paying for parking permits, meals, miscellaneous, duplicating, things like that, that we do have the authority to take out of the Game and Fish Fund because it does match, it does fit under those allowable expenditures. And actually, we're taking it out of an account within the Game and Fish Fund that deals with our licensing, that is a general account within there. So we are within our statutory legal rights to be able to use those dollars, which do support the direct link to game and fish habitat, conservation, preservation, and hunting, as the constitutional language allows for. So we are acting within the language of the law and keeping strict controls on those dollars, and we'll be able to count for them down to the penny when we seek reimbursement from the council and the legislature.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Chaudhry.
Does council concur 100% with that, or are there, or does fiscal staff concur 100% with that, or are there also use issues, not only with, not just with what agency can transfer to what, but as the use of it, of that as well for this type of activity?
Ms. Knopf.
Mr. Chair and Senator Chaudhry, you know, the use issues, that's between the department and U.S. Fish and Wildlife. And if they're comfortable that they're going to be able to, on the use issues with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, that shouldn't be a problem if the department's comfortable with it. The big issue, as Mr. Meyer explained, is the transfer to another state agency, because this diversionary language I've got in front of me, a diversion of license fee revenues occurs when any portion of license revenues is used for any purpose other than administration of the state Fish and Wildlife Agency. And so that basically it doesn't allow them to transfer money. The legislature here cannot transfer any of the game and fish money to any other agency beyond DNR. Otherwise, they could be in violation of that federal requirement. What they do internally, there are certain allowances, and I know it's a fairly lengthy document that tells the agency what they can spend money on, and they negotiate and talk with the staff from U.S. Fish and Wildlife about what they can spend it on. That I can't concur, because I don't know all the ins and outs of that. That's a very complicated process.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Knopf,
Senator Chaudhry.
In general, however, when these types of of uses are made or allocations are made within the agency, is there, as a matter of course, consultation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service? DNR says we're taking this money out of the Game and Fish Fund for this purpose, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife concurs either formally or informally?
Mr.
Chair, Senator Chaudhry, I think that goes on a regular basis, especially if there are some things that are in gray areas and that sort of thing. I know I know the Game and Fish Fund gets used for a lot of different things within the Department of Natural Resources, and I assume that there have been times in the past, too, where there have been some gray areas. Hopefully they have talked with U.S. Fish and Wildlife about whether money for the directed toward the activities of the council is appropriate And I think they have, and it seems to Meyer shaking his head, and I think that would be appropriate for them to check with them. But the activities of the council clearly are the same activities that the department is involved in. So it would seem, as long as it's there, as long as the department's spending the money, that it would seem okay to me. But
so, Mr. Chair, Mr. Myers, what's been the consultation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service about this particular use of the Game and Fish Pond?
Mr. Chair, members, we have consulted. We talk with our federal aid coordinators almost on a daily basis, it seems like sometimes, and they're perfectly all right with us doing this. And, you know, we're doing what we can to make sure the council gets off on the right foot. It would have been great when that bill was passed if there would have been some funding or some forethought put into this and a couple other things, but you know, since there was no funding attached to it, we stepped up to the plate, made sure it was up because we were required to do it. But we're trying to do all we can to make sure the council is off to a successful start and is operating functionally the best we can.
So the last question, Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer. If the legislature is appropriating $150,000 to LCC for administrative expenses, why does the DNR need $100,000 from the Game and Fish Fund to do the same thing, or is it the same thing?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, we've been incurring costs since the constitutional amendment passed back in November. So we had to get the council up and running. There were mailings, solicitations, meetings. There's no reimbursement for that right now. We're taking that out of our existing 08 and 09 budget that the legislature gave us. So in speaking with Senator Anderson, we have basically we're on our dime right now until this bill gets passed and goes to the LCC, so then those costs can be incurred from the LCC. The costs that we're going to be seeking reimbursement for are from the beginning of when the activity started on the council up until the time that this money is appropriated to the LCC. So there, unless no one was to be paid and things like that, so we need to, in order to keep it clean and avoid any conflict of interest, we want to make sure that the staff, DNR staff that's working on this, is reimbursed from the fund, and we're keeping, you know, strict tabs on what those costs are. So there's two different pieces of funding that you need to think of. One is from when the amendment passed until the legislature, one way or the other, comes up with another funding source, and that's the DNR budget right now that we're dealing with. And then once the legislature appropriates money to the LCC, those costs will all be transferred over, and then we'll be assumingly sending another letter to the chairs outlining exactly what those costs were, what how much they were, and where they came from. Or we know where they came from, but we're outlining line item by line item what those costs were used for, and we'll be seeking reimbursement most likely through the budget bill that the council will have passed. And in speaking with Chair Kilgore, they have every intention on doing that as well. Keep the DNR whole for those activities.
Senator
Mr.
Chaudhry?
Chair, Mr. Meyer, so from November 2008 until today, what costs equaling $100,000 has the DNR incurred, for example? Has it incurred $100,000 in salaries for Mr. Becker?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, no. And the letter, Senator Chaudhry, I believe, I don't know if you're CC'd on this or not, it says, administration of, dear Senator Anderson, Representative Wagenius, administration of the Lasard Council is a duty of the Commissioner of Natural Resources. To carry out this duty, the DNR has allotted $100,000 from the Game and Fish Fund to provide for the administration of the Lasard Heritage Council. This allotment is for fiscal year 2009. Bill Becker, the acting director for the Heritage Council, advises me that the council is on record acknowledging a responsibility to reimburse the Game and Fish Fund from the Outdoor Heritage Fund for the fiscal year 09 actual expenditures. I am expecting that the reimbursement request will be part of the council's recommendation to your committee for FY10 and ask that you give it positive consideration. If you have any questions, please contact Bob Meyer and my phone number. So we haven't expended $100,000. We've budgeted $100,000 for the remainder of FY09 to incur those costs. I can give you a running total right now. I believe it's $36,000
or $37,000.
Senator Chaudhry. Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, so then how did the commissioner come up with the $100,000 that it would need? And has that money already been taken from the Game and Fish Fund? And how did you come up with the $100,000?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, it's just based on a estimation of actual costs. We look at salary costs for remainder of FY09. We estimated the number of meetings that the council has. We look at the parking costs. There's a pay, you know, we have to pay for parking tags at the AA lot for the members. We estimated a cost for mailing, cost for printing, a cost for, I can provide you with the detailed estimate that we have, but it was just as you do when you prepare a budget or we present a budget to you, it was an estimate, best estimate of the cost that may be needed to cover those activities for the calendar year.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Meyer, I'd appreciate it if we could get that breakdown. And then I guess the final question would be, if and when this bill passes, for administrative costs to the LCC, will the DNR then be reassessing what costs it did not have to incur because we passed this bill, and then refunding the Game and Fish Fund for any costs, any difference between what you've expended and that $100,000?
Mr. Chair, members, the money hasn't been taken out of the Game and Fish Fund and put in another account right now. We're just taking the costs as the bills as they come in and taking that money out of the Game and Fish Fund to pay for those bills, basically, much like you would have if you had a savings account, for example, and you had something you were paying for out of your savings account. And I would assume the council will be transferring all of the costs to the LCC, and then they will take over all that fiscal responsibility. I know their first and foremost concern is hiring a staff, so I would assume the legislature will be working, that the Legislative Coordinating Commission will be working with the Outdoor Heritage Council to develop a staff. The problem you have is you're going to need to amend the statute that you actually passed, because it does still say that the DNR shall provide administrative support to the council. So, but transferring this over to the LCC, there's still a statutory requirement for the DNR to provide that support staff, which we were never in consultation with when that language came into play, that, you know, nobody asked the DNR if we wanted to provide the support staff for the council. It came up during the negotiations and conference committee. There's certainly a lot of different ways to do it, but since the legislature thought it was appropriate for us to do it and did not allocate any funding to do that, we had to take the necessary steps to make sure that the council gets the support it needs. I hope everybody understands that. We're just doing the right thing. So,
Senator Schreiber.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Meyer, I have no problem with the DNR's intent, but it's our job as a legislature to provide oversight of the executive branch as well as the various funds that citizens of Minnesota pay into, whether it be taxes or, in this case, in the Game and Fish Fund, our licenses. So it's important for me to know, and others, how you're spending it. And so I would appreciate that detailed account to make sure that what you're asking for from the Game and Fish Fund, even though it's under your purview to use that money, is being spent on the actual expended administrative expenses. So I would appreciate that detailed account.
Okay.
Now,
Mr. Chair,
the
Mr.
other Meyer. Question, you know, the other question I thought you said is talked about was that the legislature will then, or the council will then, turn around and reimburse the Game and Fish Fund for the administrative expenditures that the DNR used. And that may be the some of the council's discussion, and that's fine. But to me, I need to examine that question as well.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, this was brought up at the Budget Oversight Committee, Senator Chaudhry, on Monday night, and they did support doing this. So,
and Mr. Chair, I just remind, you know,
Senator Anderson,
Senator Chaudhry, we're this committee is the committee that's going to put together the budget for the DNR and right. pass the budget for the legacy fund. So we will have the final say in making right. sure that's done. Yeah. So
great.
I think those are important questions, mm-hmm. and I think we'll make sure that they happen. I really want to give Professor Kilgore a chance to speak to us briefly, because he's taken some time out of a really busy schedule. If we could do that.
Mr. Kilgore.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. Again, for the record, Mike Kilgore. I'm the chair of the Outdoor Heritage Council, Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council. I'll be very brief. The statute 89, 97A that creates the council, creates it as a legislative branch within the legislative branch of government, yet the administration is provided by the executive branch. And while this isn't certainly the biggest issue the council is dealing with, the council would certainly its desire is to have its own staff that we would hire and fire that would serve at the pleasure of the council. This bill would do that. It would make the administration of the council consistent with the body of government that it's in, the legislative branch. The council met this past Monday. We felt it was a very important issue, knowing that this bill would be heard, that we did talk about it. The council is on record and unanimously in support of transferring money to the Legislative Coordinating Commission so that this would allow us then to begin the process of hiring the staff. I do want to say as well, Mr. Chair and members, that we are greatly appreciative of the Department of Natural Resources support, providing Mr. Becker, who has served as our interim executive director and support staff, and we would anticipate that that would continue until we would hire a full-time executive director for the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council.
Mr. Chair, I'll just repeat that as well. I think Bill Becker has been doing a great job, and he's been spread pretty thin because he has another just full-time job at the DNR, but he's been working very, very hard for us. So that's not what this is about. This is about just moving forward and letting the council do its job and, you know, be completely independent of any agencies that or entities that are looking for funding. And that just makes good sense.
Well,
that's this was an interim measure that the legislature set up, and it's everyone's doing the best they can under those circumstances.
Okay. Mr. Meyer,
just
go
really
ahead.
Quickly, just to provide crystal clarification, Bill Becker is basically on leave from the DNR, working only on the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council. He is completely isolated. He feels very isolated at times, but he's completely isolated from the rest of the department. So he's not working on any other DNR-related activities. We've transferred all of his responsibilities to other staff, and that's why there is this occurring cost for his salary that he's been spending probably 125% of his time on, if not more, since the conception of the Lasard Heritage Council began
in
November.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you.
Well, Senator Anderson, go ahead, Senator Vickerman. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, we're talking at $300 million. Hopefully it's going to come in from this thing. We're arguing over $150,000 to manage it. I'd like those kind of investments, and I'd drive a Bentley instead of that old Buick. Just think about that. We're nickel and diamond. I'm surprised you can do it for $150,000.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know,
Senator Anderson, we
don't know exactly. We know we need somebody on board right away. And it's possible, depending on how we set up grants, programs, or other things, it's possible we'll need more. But that's something that the council just hasn't had time to figure out yet. And so we'll, you know, the council will be coming to the legislature with a recommendation on how that budget should be set up for the longer, for the next year. But yeah, you're right. Maybe it's just the first bill of the session phenomena that, you know, I don't know.
Mr. Chair,
this is a minor.
Senator Vickerman.
One of the members of this council is from my rural district, Worthington. That's 4 hour, if not a 5 hour drive. And you got to go back home. You can't expect him to come up here for $5, I can tell you that. He shouldn't. If you want to have good people, you're going to have to pay at least some kind of a decent salary.
That's right, Mr. Chair. And the members of the council have already been coming to meetings and staying in hotels overnight so they can participate in these long meetings and pay that mileage. And, you know, it's important to have this done correctly, that they can get reimbursed.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Chaudhry.
Senator Vickerman, I hope I'm not giving you the impression that I oppose or are concerned with Senator Anderson's bill. If I've given you that impression, I apologize. I fully support Senator Anderson's bill. I think it's the right thing to do for the reasons you stated. In this process, however, sometimes other monies change hands, it's important to monitor that as well. But I think what Senator Anderson is doing is wholly correct.
Senator Vickerman?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate those
Senator
comments
Anderson.
By the committee. I appreciate that very much. And if there's no other discussion, I don't know if there's anyone else who would like to be heard on this, but if I don't know if you want to check on that, but otherwise
sure.
I'll just move the bill.
Yeah. Well, any other questions or comments from members of the committee? Is there anyone else in the room who would like to make a comment on the bill? Okay. Senator Anderson has moved Senate File 119 as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, the bill
Thank
is passed.
Senator Bickerman, I am against the puppy mill bill, and I hope I've given you the correct impression that I am.
You're getting to the chair.
There's my agenda. Who's on? It's probably in here. All right, members, the other item on our agenda is to hear the first budget of our committee that is ready to go, and that's the Department of Commerce Office of Energy Security. So we've got Bill Glenn, the director, and Jeremy DeFebra, operations supervisor, and Tim Janke. Janke, did I say that right?
You did.
Oh, very good. Great. Well, welcome to the committee. And, members, I think the documents we have are a PowerPoint and then the budget pages. You should have a copy of those in front of you. So go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senators. I wanted to begin by giving a little bit of an overview of the office and its place within the department, and also introduce my colleagues here at the table. Madam Chair, Senators, we appreciate you inviting us here and being first out of the block and discussing our proposed budget for the next biennium. I do want to begin by apologizing to the committee, to you, Madam Chair, Senators, and staff. In September of 2008, the Department of Commerce made the decision to split out the telecommunications part from the Office of Energy Security. You'll recall my predecessor, Commissioner Garvey, had a long and deep history with telecommunications regulation dating back, if not before, but dating back to his chairmanship of the Public Utilities Commission, which handles both energy utilities and telecommunications entities as well. But when I took over, I do not have that background. In fact, I have trouble operating the telephone on the desk in my office. So that being the case, we took the decision to move the or make independent within the department the telecommunications office, and that reports directly to Commissioner Wilson. And I appreciate your staff's indulgence in this matter. And it's my understanding that we've arranged to have the telecommunication folk come in and present their budget separately from us, but in conjunction with the Public Utilities Commission, for which they work closely with, and assisting the commission with their analysis of telecommunications-related dockets. So I did want to begin with that, and just to make it clear that the Office of Energy Security only deals with energy issues, but we are a division of the Department of Commerce, which is a much larger agency that deals with insurance, banking, real estate licensing, and other issues. But as far as the OES, the mission – oh, I neglected to introduce myself. My name is Bill Glahn. I am the director of the Office of Energy Security and a deputy commissioner of the Department of Commerce. The mission of the office is to promote adequate, reliable, affordable, and sustainable energy resources. And we do this by administering a number of programs within the office, among them being the Energy Assistance Office. That's the state of Minnesota's version or implementation of the federal LIHEAP program, the Low-Income Heating Assistance Program. We administer that program on behalf of the federal government through our office. We are also home of the State Energy Office, which is run by Janet Streff, who I believe you are familiar with. And is Jeremy's boss, who I'll introduce in a moment. We also run and are the regulator for the Conservation Improvement Program. The Public Utilities Commission has oversight over energy utilities, but the Conservation Improvement Program, which each utility in the state operates, is actually regulated by the Office of Energy Security. We also assist, as the telecommunications folks do, we also assist the Public Utilities Commission serving as their staff, if you will, for analyzing rate cases and certificate of need proposals put forward by the state's energy utilities and other folks in the energy business. And in addition to my other roles, I serve as the state's, on an acting basis, as the state's reliability administrator. And with that, I think I will take this opportunity to introduce my colleagues here at the table. We have to my far left, Tim Janke, who serves as the chief financial officer for the Department of Commerce as a whole. And to my immediate left is Jeremy DeFebra. He is a supervisor in my office and supervises much of the grant-making part of our operation, and as such has assumed the mantle unofficially as our finance director for the Office of Energy Security. So with that, I believe Mr. Janke will try to place our small operation in a larger context.
Good afternoon.
Welcome, Mr. Janke.
Madam Chair, my name is Tim Janke, Chief Financial Officer for the Department. I'm going to walk through a few slides here initially that do include kind of the bigger picture of the Department of Commerce. It includes those other areas that aren't under the purview of this committee, but I think it gives a little perspective as to how the Department is currently formulated. The first slide here is the FTE. There's a pie chart here with the FTE count for the agency. During fiscal year 8, there's just under 312 FTE for the department, and about 62, just under 62 of those were OES staff, which is about 20% of the department. So it's a relatively, in the terms of it, it's one piece, but not overly large. If you look at the next slide, the expenditures by program area, you can see that it kind of is in direct, it's very different than the FTE slide in that 80% of the budget for all funds is in the department or is in the Office of Energy Security. So this is about 80% as opposed to the 20% of the FTE. The next slide shows expenditures by fund, and that's really the Office of Energy Security has within it the Energy Assistance Program, and that large piece, the federal funding, 74% is really that funding for energy assistance. The next slides, just to give a sense of scale and kind of how the funding works for commerce as a whole, you can see that on the left of that slide is our non-dedicated revenues, and on the right is the dedicated, of which almost $408 million are federal dollars, and those all flow through OES. And then the last slide here that I'll talk about is the overall funding, and kind of gives a sense of the fact that commerce as a whole brings in about $140 to $150 million over the biennium additional revenue over what we spend. So kind of gives that general sense. Unless there's questions, I'll turn it over to Jeremy. He can talk through more of the details on the energy security budget.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. DeFebra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jeremy DeFebra, and I'm operations supervisor in the State Energy Office in OES. And to follow up on what Mr. Janke said, placing us in context of the department, we are looking at for the next biennium a proposed budget of approximately $442 million. If you look at how that distributes, clearly a very, very significant portion of it is LIHEAP funding, approximately $170 million a year, $190 million a year, $380 million total in the biennium. Additionally, State Energy Office, which receives both weatherization assistance program funding through the Federal Department of Energy and the and State Energy Program funding through the Department of Energy, makes a fair number of pass-through grants. With those, is the other most significant part of the budget. Those activities, if you were to go down to the next slide, lead to the distribution of budget sources, which is very clearly we're very heavily weighted towards what we do with federal programs. More than 90% of our revenue is federal funds, and it's largely what we do with it is federally regulated. And what the feds tell us to do with it on the next slide is largely grants and aids. Most of it is LIHEAP grants to or financial aids paid on behalf of utility customers to help defray utility costs. A significant part is also for weatherization assistance to low-income households in order to address the same eligibility pool that LIHEAP addresses and try to reduce the energy costs in those houses on an ongoing basis rather than continuing the sort of annual subsidy payment to defray those costs. A little bit, 4% of our total budget goes to personnel, direct personnel. We also have support costs like rent, indirect, keeping the lights on. In what is more general, somewhat discretionary kind of spending, it's really only about 1% of our total budget. And that's based on 2008 actual expenditures. If we were to look at the next biennium and look at some of those categories in the next slide, the distribution is slightly different, but again, we're very weighted towards giving grants and other aids, including in the SIP program, because the majority of that assessment, the lion's share of that is a $3.6 million allocation for conservation research, development, and deployment grants. And there is also a $500,000 assessment that supports the B3 ongoing activities. And in the energy planning and advocacy area, that is one of the few areas in our shop where it is very much people and analysts doing rate case work, resource plan work, certificate of need work, facilities planning work, and very much focused on those sorts of activities. We did have one unallotment in the governor's package, and we do have one change item for the coming biennium. Otherwise, we're looking at same level requests on general fund. The unallotment, which we spoke to, I believe it was 2 weeks ago in this committee, is out of the 2007 appropriation of $1 million for the Rural Wind Energy Development Assistance Center, which is operated by the Southwest Initiative Foundation in conjunction with the Center for Rural Policy and Development and some other of the Initiative Foundation organizations. We discussed budget realities and general fund realities with the staff of that program, and none of them could be here today, but they did acknowledge that while they would have preferred not being a target, they very much understood the budget situation, and they have been planning for a number of months now for the potential of a reduction in their funding. Their outlays have been such that even with this reduction, we believe and they believe that they can continue operating through June 30, 2010, so through fiscal 10. And that is, given that it was a 2007 or 2008 appropriation, that gives them a full 3 years of operation, which I don't believe was fully anticipated in the original appropriation.
Madam Chair, if I could interrupt Mr. DeVivre for a moment.
He pointed out that the one budget impact that we're asking for as a proposal in the next biennium is to assess some of our operating costs back to utilities that are not currently assessed. And so what I would characterize as our operating budget, the budget we use to pay salaries and pay for our space and the other cost of operating the office, this change would bring to, is if I can correctly characterize, 100% of those operating funds are obtained either from the federal government through grants from the federal government or from assessments that the office goes and makes to regulated utilities and other energy providers in the state. So we would, the $284,000 was the last vestigial amount of funds that we were using for operating purposes from the state general fund. Now, Jeremy's going to go on to describe some of the grants and some of the other programs that do use, at least in part, general funds. But I want to make it clear where the bulk of the money has come to pay my salary and our space on the sixth floor of the Golden Rule building and those day-to-day operating costs.
In context of our total general fund, that change item, our annual general fund appropriation is approximately $3 million. Right now, we assess all but $284,000 of that through various assessment mechanisms, either for our rate analyst activities, our intervention activities, for SIP, or actually SIP is a 200 fund, I take that back, there is an alternative energy engineering authorization to assess for those activities to municipals and co-ops. There's a little bit of state energy office that are activities that we believe support the broader goals and mandates that utilities have to meet their RES mandate and their SIP targets, that we believe it's appropriate that we could assess to them as an activity that benefits them. And the current alternative energy engineering activity, because it's only on municipalities or municipals and co-ops, disproportionately burdens those when all of the utilities, including the investor owns, are benefiting from that.
Madam Chair, if I could just add, we're cognizant, as per the previous discussion, that you know we're saying that it's the federal monies or it's utilities monies, that we understand that citizens pay it one way or another, whether it's through taxes that get placed in the state's general fund or through their utility bills or through taxes they pay to the federal government. We understand that all of our costs are paid by the citizenry at some point.
That's true. I do want to know a little bit more about which pots are assessed across the utilities as opposed to the Renewable Development Fund, which is just assessed to XL ratepayers and always has been. And so a lot of your activity, so did I understand correctly that you said there's broad assessments across, you said including municipal utilities and co-ops?
I know he'll fill in the details, but for example, we have our regulatory work where we're providing analytical support for the Public Utilities Commission, whether it's for a rate case or a certificate of need. Those costs are collected for each rate case or for each certificate and then billed to the applicant.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm sure Jeremy will describe we have broader programs that have broader reach that we assess more generally to utilities in the state.
Mr. DeFeber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For instance, work that we do with MISO, work that we do with the Midwest Transmission group that is formed, those sorts of things, we have authority to broadly assess to the electric utilities as all of them benefiting from that activity. There are likely activities that we do related to the gas industry that we can then assess broadly to the gas utilities. We also have assessment authority for our SIP activities that are assessed broadly to all the utilities based on their share of total revenues.
So are all of the assessments, they're either to a specific company or group of companies because of some activity that it's connected to, or they're broadly assessed otherwise? except for the Renewable Development Fund. Is that right?
Well, Madam Chair, the Renewable Development Fund isn't actually assessed. That we
sure.
know that money, except for those activities that you appropriated funds from, that do not come to us. They pay directly out of Xcel's coffers. So obviously, Xcel is burdened with that cost, whether it's assessed or not. So conceptually, that's correct.
Well, I've strongly supported the Renewable Development Fund year after year after year, and helped to create it in 1994, and it's done a lot of good work. But it's after 15 years now that it's been around, I think maybe my ratepayers might be asking why they're paying for all of this wonderful renewable energy research and projects that go all over the state. And it's just Xcel ratepayers that have been paying for much of that work. And that concerns me somewhat. Even though I really support a lot of the good work that's been done with the fund, there's also been questions raised about that funding going outside of Minnesota. And we've talked about that in previous years. I think there's some language now that in the statute that tries to limit that. Do you know?
Madam Chair, I can't speak to that.
All right. We can check on that. Anyway.
Well, Madam Chair,
Senator Kubley,
your language has led me to believe you don't believe there are Xcel ratepayers outside the metro area. I'm a Xcel ratepayer as well.
I didn't know you were an Xcel ratepayer. I actually would be interested to see the map, but I know it doesn't cover the whole state.
Okay.
And so I know my constituents are all Xcel ratepayers, and they've been paying into this fund for 15 years, and I guess yours have been too. But a lot of other folks haven't been and have been receiving the benefits.
Well, my district, Madam Chair, is varied. Some of them are Otter Tail ratepayers. Some of them, there's a variety of utilities operating in my district, but I just happen to be one of their ratepayers.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fredrickson.
To be fair, the trade-off is Xcel gets to continue operating nuclear power plants,
yes.
which are old base power plants, and would be cheaper than building new base power plants. I just wanted to
absolutely
mention that.
No, absolutely true, and that's been the deal that was made for 15 years. And it was in exchange for storing that nuclear waste, which of course could affect people across the state as well, potentially. Okay. Do you have any more? Do you want to go through the budget pages or?
Just a couple of things very briefly.
Go ahead,
one
please,
is on the topic of are all utilities assessed for those
uh-huh.
costs that affect them? And in our change item, we are changing one very small increment of assessment. I think it's about $186,000 this year. That is within statute an allowance to assess munis and co-ops only for our what back in 1988 or so, I think, when this was passed, was called our alternative energy engineering activity. So part of our change item is to restructure that so that those costs plus those other unassessed costs within the state energy office, the $284,000 that we show as additional revenue, are assessed broadly to all utilities rather than that increment that is now just assessed to munis and co-ops. So that is a...
Can you point to where this shows up on the budget pages, the change item? What?
11.
Page 11? Is that your only change item? Oh. Okay, well, we should go through the change items then. Is that...
Madam Chair, that is the only energy-related change
item. Oh, these other ones are commerce. Got it. That are outside of energy. Got it. So that's your only one. On page 11?
That's correct.
All right. Okay. It would be helpful to get a report on all of the grants that we've given you or we've appropriated over the last biennium to find out where they're at, how much has been used, if there's any dollars remaining. It'd be nice to get that from the Renewable Development Fund, too. So all we have are the general fund ones, are the pump grants, Rock 10. Are those Okay, so there's still in the E85 pump grants, there's $1 million for fiscal year 10, which we're in. No, fiscal year 10 starts in July. That's right. That's right. And I'd just like to know how that money's been going out the door.
We highlighted some of the larger both general fund and RDF appropriations from the last biennium that it would be useful to report on where they're at and how they've progressed. And the first on that list is the 85 grant or pump grants, which is operated by the American Lung Association. We have worked in concert with them for more than a decade now in developing the 85 infrastructure, and we have significant milestones. We've gotten more than 350 stations in the state, which is well more than any other state in the nation, and we passed 22 million gallons sold in the past calendar year. That being said, the ability to attract new stations to install pumps has slowed down some. I think current financial conditions have not helped, certainly. We expect that they're probably going to expend, of the total $1.75 million that's been appropriated to them, $1.4 million of that approximately by the end of the biennium.
And then do you expect they'll be able to spend $1 million in 2010? Or in fiscal year 2010, or do we know?
Madam Chair, I think I'd like the Lung Association staff who operate that program to answer that question. We have asked it, and we have not yet gotten an answer that I would like to give to you as gospel.
Okay, well, why don't we invite them in to testify, and we'll get the detailed breakdown from them about how the progress is going and anticipated to go.
And Madam Chair, I think clearly a lot of it depends on other forces that are in play, both as far as the financial condition and economic stimulus funds that may be coming down. If I can continue on to the Rock 10, which was a significant allocation of general fund dollars, that I think probably, Madam Chair, you know more about where this has progressed to than I do, but from my read of it, it's been an extremely successful citizen participatory process that has, in some minds, arrived at a conclusion that was perhaps unexpected in recommending a biomass feedstock solution to provide energy to the Rock 10 plant. St. Paul Port Authority is operating that study and that project, and our grant, by direction of the legislature, is to them. They have expended a little over $2 million of that grant so far. They have made commitments for a number of engineering studies because there are many alternatives on how to approach the biomass feedstock and conversion to energy. And they, again, this is one where I think it would be useful to have the Port Authority directly testify on remaining aspects of that project and what they feel is the vital nature of the appropriation that remains.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. We'll do that. And as I understand it, they're trying to they're just working on trying to get financing together for this anaerobic digester plant to create the natural gas substitute that would go into the pipeline. And I haven't heard an update on that in maybe a month or two, so I'm not sure how that's going. But I'll be meeting with them Friday, and we'll make sure we bring them back to get more details about that too. We already heard about the Rural Wind Energy Program, although we may invite them to come in too just to tell us what the progress has been. And you mentioned earlier when you came in that, well, there's a limit to the aggregation issue, that we don't have enough money to be able to aggregate wind turbine purchases. So I'd like to know what else they're being able to do that's helpful. And then the heating assistance, has that all been spent?
Madam Chair, yes, that was spent. It was designated to be spent by the end of calendar 8, I believe it was, and that was all programmed. It was actually propitious at the time because it gave us some flexibility in doing some program that targeted flood victims in the southern part of the state from that late summer and fall. So it was fortunate that federal funds designated to us may not have been given us the flexibility to be able to target some funds that were very useful there. On to RDF, there was $500,000 each year of biennium appropriated for anaerobic digester grants. We have awarded, we've designated 5 of them. We have contracts in place for 4 of them. The fifth one is having some issues in nailing down their financing, and we are waiting on finalizing our contract with them until they have finalized their debt agreement. That is, we feel as that has a significantly greater potential than the awards that we have already made on an ongoing basis. If there are resources for that, that would be certainly in looking at potential shovel-ready projects. We see a pipeline of those perhaps as potential. The solar PV rebates, which combine $1 million in RDF and a $200,000 supplemental appropriation from 2008 general fund, is fully subscribed, has been, I believe, since late November. Clearly, there is demand for that. It's very popular program, and it's another one we look at as a potential shovel-ready conduit. The automotive projects, a significant amount of money has been repurposed for the Green Jobs Task Force and the Green Manufacturing Initiative and other activities. Of the remaining approximately $1.5 million, $1 million has been programmed, and we're about to release an RFP for the remaining funds. We had the RFP, actually, we published for the RFP back in December, but we have held on actually acting on that. We put it on hold until some of the budget issues that were pending were clarified. But we're going ahead and republishing that request for proposals in the next couple of weeks. The hydrogen roadmap, which is at $250,000, we have been rolling that effort into what is a broader effort in developing clean energy technology roadmap, and it was the feeling of the clean energy technology collaborative members and others in the industry that getting too far down the line with a single technology without doing a more integrated planning approach to the broader array of technologies was not the best approach to take. So we have been working through the Clean Energy Technology Collaborative and through other avenues to advance a broader array of plans for other technologies, and then we hope if it seems most reasonable to apply those funds to the hydrogen specific roadmap.
Who is this clean energy technology group that you're talking about?
It's a group put together through the governor on I think it was originally part of the executive order that created the Office of Energy Security, or I would say rebranded the Office of Energy Security. It was a group. It's a group actively working now and includes quite a few folks from the academic community, from the clean energy, renewable energy community who are working together. In fact, it's either today or tomorrow they're having their next meeting, and we're trying to put together a report that we can share with folks to how do we get from A to B in implementing the clean energy economy here in Minnesota.
Well, I think I've heard some concern that the hydrogen grants that – there haven't been – well, that's not the hydrogen grants per se, the roadmap. I can't remember if that includes some grants. But those haven't been going anywhere.
There was originally, I believe, $3.25 million appropriated out of general fund for hydrogen, and then there was a rescission in last session of, was it 2.6 or 2.6 of that. So there, some again, we felt that on the hydrogen grants, it was a cart before the horse. If we were to make the grants for hydrogen technology demonstrations without having done the planning of how we would roll out a hydrogen infrastructure, the roadmap work.
Okay. Well, we passed some laws telling you to do those things, to do the infrastructure and to do the roadmap, and it sounds like you've kind of decided you don't want to do those things and that you're going to go in a different direction. Seems to me you need to propose some legislation to change the law if you want to do things differently. And, you know, it may be, we may agree with you, but it would be nice to know that our laws are being followed.
Madam Chair, I don't know that it is doing things differently or repurposing what it's appropriated for. I believe it's looking at a timeline and process that we believe is most appropriate for it rather than saying we are either not going to do it, period, or we are going to do something different with it. It is, we're trying to lay out what we believe is a most effective way of programming those activities.
Mr. Glahn.
Madam Chair, though, I think you raise a good question, and I think we owe you a report, at least, or an explanation as to what we're doing and how we're going about doing it. So we'll commit to getting that back to you at a very early date.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to see that, those recommendations. Okay. Do you want to move on to the rural wind loans?
Yeah, and that's one where the best laid plans, I believe, it was a number of industry members thought it was a very useful provision at the time it was passed, and the conditions in the market have changed, and particularly as it was aimed at offsetting interconnection study costs, the MISO process, queue process, has changed significantly, and to date, no one has requested a loan under that program. No one has expressed any interest in that, and the industry members feel that it really was you know, yesterday's solution for what is no longer today's problem.
So, do you think it's that there's not a problem in paying for this anymore, and or that what's the change?
There, Madam Chair, I believe there are a couple of changes. One is that the way it was structured, the timing of the loan no longer fits with how value might be delivered to the developers. The cap on what could be provided to them also no longer fits with what are likely MISO interconnection study costs.
How much? I mean, what's the cap, and how much are people needing?
Madam Chair, if memory serves, I believe the cap is $100,000
per loan.
Per, I believe it may be per entity. So if an entity is developing multiple sites, they may be limited. I would have to check on that, though.
And the cost is
the cost could we've been hearing costs that may be anywhere from $200,000 to $500,000 on some of the interconnection studies.
Mr. Glahn.
Madam Chair, having been involved in the development of a couple of all the natural gas plants, you know, they involve the same interconnection issues and the same MISO process, and I can confirm that cost in that range are what's necessary to move through the process of doing the engineering studies and the transmission load flow studies and all the associated work that goes into that to getting the point where you have the permissions lined up to interconnect to the grid. So, again, I think this might fall under the category of the need certainly hasn't changed. In fact, if anything, I'd characterize it, the problem has the MISO queue reform has gone a long way to solving what was one aspect of the problem. But we have many other aspects of the problem, which I would characterize as having worsened in the interim. So mm-hmm. perhaps what would be best would be to come back to you with some suggestions on how to reposition this to accomplish the same goals and actually provide a program that people would find useful and want to apply for.
Mm-hmm. That would be great. Okay. Renewable energy grants. You said something about this earlier, but I sort of missed that. I think you did, about the grants. What's happening with these?
Madam Chair, actually, I don't think I did, so you didn't miss it.
Okay.
we have, it was a $2.25 million first year, $2 million second year. There have been some reallocation, designation of those funds. So we did a first round of approximately, I believe it was $2.1 million of awards. And I should note that we have a much more detailed draft summary of all of the grant-making activities that has occurred. But it's draft right now, so I would like to finalize it before we actually turn it in as a document to the committee, if that would be okay.
Well, we'll forgive you since you are the first agency here. We'll give you a little more time for your homework.
Thank you. Very gracious.
Okay, go ahead.
We are looking at issuing an RFP for the remaining amount, which is approximately 1.5, I believe. We have also a grant with the Metropolitan Council for the algae to biofuels project that was legislature directed.
And has that money gone out?
The grant is in place. I believe the money transfer has occurred. Tim would.
And IRE?
And IRE is designated for a $3 million grant. That grant is in place. I believe they've just invoiced us for the first increment of that funding.
And so that's $3 million for the biennium?
Second year of the biennium. It's out of RDF and in that Laws 07 appropriations bill, I believe you base leveled IRE at $5 million a year out of RDF for the coming biennium.
For the coming biennium, for 10-11? Did we do that? I can't remember.
I don't, Madam Chair, I don't believe I have the language with me, but I think my memory's right on that one.
Yeah, in the next biennium? We already did that. It was awfully generous of us. Okay, but so that continues their base funding. Okay.
I'm sure Irie thanks you for your benefit.
All right, great. Well, that's helpful, and we'll wait to see your more detailed breakdown of some of these grants in the future. And are there any questions about any of these? Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, and to any of you there, maybe it's to Mr. Jahnke. Page 32 of the other document. I was looking at the current appropriation line, first of all, and I see that in fiscal year 2008, there was almost $13 million of appropriation. That's going to fall to $3.2 million by 2011. And I was just curious about what we were doing in 2008 that bumped that figure up that high.
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, in that year, there was a number of these one-time general fund appropriations that Mr. DeFebri just went through, the E85 pump grants, the Rock 10. A number of those were appropriated in the first year of that biennium. Some were in the second year as well, but now there's no base for those in the coming biennium.
Okay, and Madam Chair, Mr. Jahnke, then. I'm comparing the general fund appropriation with the expenditures by fund. And in the coming biennium, the appropriations are 6.48, but yet your expenditures are 7.9. Now, why don't – how is that going to work? Where is the other $1.5 million going to go?
Madam Chair and Senator Fredrickson, there are two items that we have in there that are not part of the – there's some carry forward that we had from the St. Paul Port Authority for the Rock 10. The money was available into the coming biennium. There was carry forward language for that, as well as the the base level funding for the, you can see it on the, it's actually part of the technical adjustments line there for the E85 pump grants. Because of the way that that money was appropriated, the base level was changed in fiscal year 9 down to $250,000. And so we have this increase in the coming biennium to...
Ms. Chunky, is that technical correction line? Where would we see that in this document?
It's on, Madam Chair and Senator Frederickson, it's right below the $3.2 million.
I see. Okay. And Madam Chair, Mr. Yockey, another, I guess a couple more questions. The base appropriation, or the appropriation is going to go from $4.25 million in 2009 to $3.24 in 2011. You know what? Essentially, what aren't you going to, and I'll roll two questions in here. What aren't you going to be doing because of that reduction in general fund? And then also on full-time equivalents, you're going to be going from 73 FTEs to 63 FTEs. Are they going to be, how are you going to manage that? Are they going to be positions you're not going to fill, or will you actually be laying off some of your staff? You know, what's going on with that?
Madam Chair and Senator Frederickson, as far as the appropriation going down, it's really, we can get you some more detail on the specifics of it and kind of how it all lays out. But in essence, what it is it's the ending of these specific general fund appropriations. Our general fund operational budget, the governor's recommending no change from fiscal year 9 through 10 and 11. That base level funding is staying the same, but it's just a matter of kind of how it's displayed here for the changes in those appropriations that are ending. But I'm sorry, we'll get you some information on the specifics of that so you can kind of lay it out.
Madam Chair, Mr. Yockey, the FTEs then.
Yeah, and I was going to get to that as well. I'm sorry. Madam Chair and Senator, as far as the FTEs, the fiscal 9 FTE numbers are we're assuming that we're going to, for the remainder of the year and the activity that's happened, much of this information was put together back in August and September for that fiscal 9. We were assuming, we always assume that all current employees will work through the remainder of the year, though that never happens. We always have some turnover in staff. It's expected that 73 number will be much lower into the 60s by the end of this fiscal year, just because of the time between staff leaving and new staff being hired. Under as far as the movement between fiscals 10 and 11, I don't believe that we're planning on any layoffs of existing staff. Will through attrition or not filling of a position and those types of things. I don't believe we're planning any actual layoffs of staff.
Madam Chair, Senator, I can tell you that, you know, notwithstanding the intricacies of the budgeting process, we do not plan any layoffs. We have a couple of positions that we had unfilled that we either will eliminate or not fill, and we do anticipate one or two retirements in the next coming years. So no one's going to be let go. We actually have a couple of positions we are trying to fill in our area, but we will not be doing any layoffs or reductions from our current complement.
Trying to understand all these numbers as well. But what are other financial transactions under the different categories of expenditures?
Madam Chair, I'm not certain exactly which items fall into that, but we'll get that for you.
All right. The main other thing I wanted to ask about, did you have any follow-up?
No,
Senator Frederickson, is the federal stimulus. And, you know, it's been hard to keep up with everything that's been coming out of Washington, but now we actually have a bill that passed, and there's a long list of energy-related programs that are being funded. And the latest list I just got from the House bill includes, well, there's a list of 10 different energy grant programs here. $2 billion for energy efficiency and renewable energy research, development, et cetera. $500 million? It's hard to read all those zeros. No, this one's $500 million.
Yeah.
For programs authorized under Part E of Title III of the Energy Policy and Conservation Act. I won't read all of these, but maybe you have the same list. I just received this today from Lauren Lautog, apparently forwarded this, but it's obviously available through our congressional offices. Do you have the latest list?
Madam Chair, I got the list emailed to me right before I came over here. I didn't have a chance to print it out, but I believe it reflects the list that was in the Monday markup. So if there are any changes, I'm not aware of them.
What I want to know, and we're going to ask all the agencies that have any federal stimulus money related to their jurisdictions, you know, when you come back, we want you to come back in a couple weeks as we're working through the budget to give us, you know, some of the other issues, the details we talked about. But what I'd like to have the agencies do is just come back and tell us exactly what different grant programs are passing and what your plan is to try to apply for any of those dollars. We just need to know that as soon as possible, because we may have to pass authorizing legislation to be able to tap into some of these grant programs. And we just need to know if our state would be eligible or if any of our existing programs are eligible. So can I just make that a formal request that I'd like you to come back with a detailed list of what the federal grants are in the energy area and what your proposal would be to try to apply for some of those funds?
Madam Chair, Senators, yes,
is
the answer to your question. We will come back with you with much more detail on the stimulus, and we were prepared for our budget in the biennium. But you'll be aware that Janet Streff, who is the manager of our state's energy office, she also serves as vice chair of her national organization, the National Association of State Energy Officers. She has been, in fact, they had a meeting out in Washington in the not too distant past where they were afforded the opportunity to meet with the Obama transition team and speak with them about their thoughts on the stimulus. She and Jeremy as well have been tracking closely the legislation, have been doing some back of the envelope calculations on how much money would flow through to Minnesota, keeping in mind some of it's flowing directly to states and local communities. Some of it will be flowing through the state energy office. And we're keeping a track on what the Senate's doing and what the House is doing and what dollars. And the amounts that are being talked about are orders of magnitude above what we're spending on those activities today. So we have the general concern about, well, the good news is we'll be getting lots and lots of money, we hope. The bad news is now what? You know, we have to put a lot of effort, and it'll be a big managerial effort to scale up the programs that we have. And I know Jeremy is working on that. Janet is participating in a working group between the administration and the legislative branch to try to come up with a plan jointly. And I know she'll be attending. She's already, I think Jeremy and her both have attended meetings already on the topic and will be attending further meetings. And I'll let Jeremy tell you what he's actually doing.
Well, thank you very much. There's a couple of things I should caution about within the next couple of weeks. One is that while Senate action may have taken place, will there have been a conference committee and a resolution to that? And right now the numbers on some of the programs that are very critical to our area, that are direct formula grants that go through our office, are significantly different between what passed the House and what is in the Senate markup. There are also areas such as the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grants that the distribution formulas are not crystal clear yet, and other areas like renewable research and other things where the distribution formulas are non-existent. So we can, those things that are knowable, we can try to talk in detail, but there may be things that have not been revealed to mortal man yet.
Or woman, yeah. Well, and absolutely, I understand that. And we've had some good testimony in front of Senator Prentner Solon's committee about this already from you and from Janet Streff. And so you can know that we're working on trying to get that information as well through whatever channels of we have. But it's just critical for us to be working together on this and make sure that whatever we need to do as a state to be able to accept and make use of energy efficiency funds, weatherization funds, we want to maximize those opportunities, obviously. And, you know, for example, in the area of weatherization, the amount of money that might be available to and the goals to how many homes they want to weatherize for low-income families, we need to know what capacity, besides what's in your agency, but what capacity out in the nonprofit sector, what training needs there are to train the auditors or the, you know, the folks who actually go out and do the work, what those needs are. So we're going to need to work together because we might be able to, you know, be able to prepare for that. And if we're, well, it's all going to happen very quickly. And we need to have our plan in place clearly before the legislative session ends and before we get our budgets out of this committee. Hopefully we can put in place whatever additional programs we need, enhancements we need to make use of that. We'll do our best. Mr. Glenn.
Madam Chair, Senators, we will work with your staff to get back on your calendar at the earliest date, come back with a more specific plan. In fact, when I made my earlier statement, I had exactly the weatherization program in mind, the National Association. I remember Janet showing me a flow chart they had done to try to gear up. It's something on the order of 10 times the number of homes per year that are currently being weatherized across the country. Is the goal of the million homes a year, is that right? Million homes a year. We're doing something 150,000 a year across the country. We do through our office, not that other people aren't doing it on their own voluntarily, but through our office and the low-income program, doing something like 3,800, 4,000 homes a year. And we're, again, it's a 5 to 10 times sort of number. So we're trying to plan as far ahead as we can because we need to – we have a Dunwoody program that trains auditors. We need to start training auditors. We need to have the contractors in place. We need to have the ability to, at the most basic level, identify the homes we're going to weatherize, get a list together of what we could start working on. So it's going to be a big effort. I don't want to minimize that. And I agree with you, the sooner we start, the better.
Okay. Well, let's just stay in touch about that, and we'll look forward to hearing from you more in more detail about that in the future. Great. Are there any other questions? Mr. Glahn, and then...
I just had a concluding comment. But
okay. Well, Madam Senator Torres Ray.
Madam Chair, I am just so excited to hear your request about just preparing, because I hear that in my district as well, that we really need to figure out if the state will have the capacity to accept and use these dollars. And I don't have an answer. I don't know, you know, how we could use that. And so I just want to reinforce that message of needing to convene a meeting just to talk about that, of ideas, possibilities, and mapping out, you know, needs in the district, in the state of Minnesota, mm-hmm. where we really need to invest those dollars because these times demand that we be very creative and that we maximize those investments. And so I just wanted to say that I think that's a very good question, and I hope we have a meeting, convene a hearing of this committee to hear that from this agency.
Yeah, and it may be useful to bring in some of the groups around the state that work on weatherization, for example, some of the nonprofit groups or the CAP agencies or whoever your partners are in putting that money out. So we can, I'm sure they're all thinking about the same thing. You know, nobody's been under a rock. Everyone knows it's out there and it's coming, and I'm sure everyone is scrambling, but we got to make sure we coordinate our efforts and again, see if there's gaps. See if, you know, if there's a way that we can put a little more, I hate to say money, but support for those auditor training programs to beef them up a little bit. There may be some things like that that we can do if we can find a way in the, through our budget process so that we can maximize those dollars. I mean, it's a great, great opportunity for us to create a lot of jobs in our state and to really make huge progress on the goals that we've all been working on. And I would suspect that Minnesota is in a good position on a lot of these things. I mean, one of the other big pieces is going to be dollars to help public buildings retrofit for energy efficiency. And we have already a statewide audit that's been going on for several years. So I think we're pretty well positioned to have that baseline information about which buildings are ready to go. We just have to make sure we've got the capacity. And so we should talk about, we should convene a meeting on a couple of those key areas to bring in players from around the state. But I don't know if you're already doing that.
Did you want to say something?
Mr. DeFebri?
Madam Chair, in context of weatherization, we've surveyed all of our subgrantees who deliver the program in various local areas on what their current capacities are, what they feel their near-term ramp of capacities might be, and where they see their needs are. The reality is that there is no way to go from zero to 100 in 3 seconds with that kind of program. It takes specialized skills and training in order to be able to deliver it, and it is a very daunting task. And so all of the minds that can be brought to that and all of the creativity that can be brought to that will be very useful.
You know, I should mention my continuing saga that you've all heard ad nauseum about my efforts to fix up my house and insulate it. it's finally got insulated this week, and my contractor was going to, I want him to weather strip my windows. And when the insulation guys showed up to pump the insulation into the walls, they said, weather strip? Oh, we don't weather strip. We never do that. And so I called the boss and talked to him later, and he said, yes, I'm planning to weather strip your windows. But he said, this metal V stripping that he uses, that's the best, that's what I wanted. He said, you can't even find it anymore. He said he tried his suppliers and several different suppliers, and he couldn't even find it. He finally called me and said he has it now. And he said, oh, most people just replace the windows. And I'm like, I don't know who can afford to do that. I know I can't afford to replace all my windows. So it's just an example. I mean, and that's – there's you know, just the supplies that we need to be able to get out to these houses and do that work. Maybe – we've got to scale up all the different parts along this endeavor to make it work. So there, it is a big challenge. But as long as we're all doing everything we can,
Senator,
Mr. Glahn.
I just want to agree. I think we have the financial infrastructure in place to receive the money through the programs that we have, the State Energy Office, the Office of Energy Assistance, and Tim's office as well. But I share your concern whether it's one thing to get the money in the door, it's another thing to put it to productive use. And you heard a little bit about the efforts the weatherization folks are making, and I can tell you similar efforts are going on in other parts of the office to see what we could ramp up, how quickly we could ramp it up. I think it would be unfortunate if we have this windfall and we're trying desperately to create new jobs and we end up with mismanagement or waste or, God forbid, fraud or something that comes that gives the whole operation a black eye. So we're very cognizant of that. We're working hard. We'll be happy to come with you to have a specific meeting on that topic and look forward to working with you going forward.
Sounds great.
I appreciate this opportunity for my first appearance before your committee. I wanted to thank my colleagues here, Mr. Janke, with his able... I refer to these guys when I see them in the hallway as the money men, but lately I've been referring to them as the no money men with our current budget situation. And I want to especially thank Mr. DeFebri for rising from his sickbed to join us this morning. He was not doing well earlier this week, and I'm glad to see he's on the road to recovery. But Madam Chair, Sanders, thank you.
Thank you very much. And Mr. DeFebri, we're going to need you on the job, so you got to stay healthy.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to avoid going to Florida where the blood thins.
All right, good. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again soon. Members, do we have a plan for next week?
Madam Chair, members, on Tuesday we'll have the Science Museum and the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
That'll be our next meeting. So, Senator Fredrickson?
Madam Chair, could I request that as soon as you know what agencies are coming before the committee and what dates, would you send us an email so, you know, if we have an hour or so in our office, we can read ahead and
That's a great idea. We'll do that. We can give you as much advance notice as possible. And I'm going to ask the staff to start creating budget notebooks for everybody. I don't think we're getting them anymore from the agency, so we can make our own. So just leave your documents here, and we'll put them in your folders and figure out a way to organize them.
Madam Chair, members, our page is putting together, but we don't have them all for today, but he's putting together the big notebooks. We have to do it ourselves.
All right, sounds good. Thank
Are they
you
like
all
this thick binders or something?
Yeah. We have to do it ourselves.
Credenza's groaning already with all the LCCMR and everything else.
But we can keep them on our carts. You don't have to cart them back to your office every day.
That's all right. That's
we'll,
all right.
We'll keep track of them for you. Yeah. Great. With that, the meeting's adjourned.
In fact, I think.